earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings.
Akwe, greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations. From the drum Whitetail off Arbor Records CD Thunder Drums number 2. That honor song was called For Our People, exemplifying the native ethic of caring for the well-being of one's tribe or community. Ashkwe greetings and hello everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. My guest today is a spokesperson for the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, Mr. Gerardo Reyes Chavez. We are together here in Immokalee, Florida, participating in a week-long encuentro. Mr. Chavez is a farm worker who, along with fellow Coalition Immokalee workers, have courageously organized themselves to fight against the many social and economic injustices endured by laborers exploited over the years in the agricultural industry, as is the case here in Southwest Florida. We will be talking more about the coalition struggle for worker rights to fair wages and decent working and living conditions, as well as CIW's precedent-setting victory in the Yum Brands Taco Bell boycott campaign. Gerardo is one of the organizers of this Encuentro, a very special gathering of student and youth activists from across the country who are dedicated to global justice. These young people work together as the National Student Farm Worker Alliance, SFA. The SFA supports the farm worker movement. They were a major part of Coalition of Immokalee Workers' battle against Taco Bell. The SFA continues to support the Coalition of Immokalee Workers and is working on anti-globalization issues, especially those related to multinational agribusiness. Yad Kiddushi Native Center is very honored to work with both SFA and CIW and participate in this first Immokalee Encuentro. Encuentro, a Spanish term for meeting, gathering, or encounter, was convened from August 1st through the 7th, 2005, in Immokalee, Florida. The students, youth activists, and community organizers came together to share skills, knowledge, and experience. They were truly a diverse, dedicated, and talented group of people. The way in which the week-long dialogue took place was very special. Event organizers, trainers, and participants were careful to ensure equality and respect for all. Everyone was very open to issues of power dynamics, such as racism, gender, sexism, economic status, class privilege, and white supremacy. It takes great effort to listen and make agreements based on inclusion, consent, and consensus. In Indigenous people's culture, we follow a traditional council circle way of gathering, using the Galuska Watanabe talking stick or talking feather. In this way, all have respect for each other. All listen carefully to each other without bias or judgment. This ethic encourages everyone to consider how one's words and actions will impact the well-being of all life for 7 future generations. I want to share a paragraph from the Encuentro booklet entitled Listen and Build. Quote, "We envision a space in which all voices are heard, seeing and hearing one another in our full humanity, where everyone feels comfortable to contribute and barriers between experts and audience are broken down. It's also extremely important that we confront the power hierarchies that we observe amongst and within ourselves and oppressive attitudes and behaviors we have internalized and continue to perpetuate even as activists." Unquote. The week-long Immokalee Encuentro operated on a consensus-based model, trying to be non-hierarchical, making sure everyone's voices and concerns were heard, while also promoting group cohesion and participation. In the spirit of the Indigenous Zapatista movement in Chiapas, the Student Farmworker Alliance Encuentro participants believe in direct action and direct democracy, where people and communities act through their own power to control and change their own lives for the better. This understanding of what I term cultural democracy and self-determination is also how the Coalition of Mockingly Workers tries to operate. The efforts of CIW members like Gerardo Reyes Chavez, our program guest today, exemplifies how this organizational process can serve as a model for other community movements. This is one of the important lessons from Immokalee. Immokalee is one of the battlegrounds for poor peoples and immigrant rights. The oppression and exploitation faced by Immokalee workers over the years in the agricultural industry has been nothing less than modern-day slavery. In many ways, Immokalee is like a third-world country. The community demographics consists of a large percentage of people from Central America and the Caribbean. There is a small strata of wealthy business and landowners, this upper class being mostly white. The majority of the population are poor people of color. It should be no surprise to learn that this being a rural farming area, that the big powerful agricultural industry rules the region. The town of Immokalee resembles a large migrant labor camp. During the harvest season, the year-round population of approximately 14,000 people increases to approximately 30,000 persons. Most of the people are Mexican, Guatemalan, Haitian, and from other Central American countries. A large percentage of immigrants are indigenous peoples for whom Spanish is a second or third language. Some of the native languages spoken include Mam, Choi, Kanjabal, and Nahuatl. As the central booklet states, and I quote, Immokalee and its surrounding agricultural fields are, to put it simply, the direct and real-life result of free trade, militarism, capitalist exploitation, and racist oppression. It is also the site of direct and inspirational resistance to these policies by those most affected by them, unquote. Yadkinishi Native Center, geographically, is located nearby Immokalee. It is the town where we often shop, use the post office, visit friends on the small Indian reservation, and attend meetings at the Coalition Immokalee Workers. I mention this so that when we speak about poverty, police brutality, and racism, which are serious issues in Immokalee, that our worldwide listeners know that these conditions are from our first-hand observations of daily life in this community. Environmental justice, a major focus of Yadkinishi Native Center's work and the topic of many of our Wolf Mountain Radio programs, is also very much a problem in Immokalee. This is due to the fact that agribusiness uses many highly toxic pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers in the citrus groves and vegetable fields. Many farm workers often become sick as a result of being contaminated by ag chemical sprays. There are, of course, environmental health problems affecting the local population of Immokalee due to poisonous chemicals polluting drinking water or people eating fish or food from gardens that may also be toxic. Wherever agrochemicals are used, there are always reports of high rates of cancer and even deaths. I am sure we will be talking more about this serious topic of environmental racism in my interview. Before I welcome Gerardo to our program, let me provide a little background information about the Coalition of Immokalee Workers. The Coalition is a fine community-based organization whose purpose is to advance the well-being of farm workers and their families. The organization is based in Collier County, Florida, but the Coalition is active statewide and within the National Farm Workers Movement. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers is well respected for their dedicated struggles to improve the poor working conditions of farm workers. The Coalition of Immokalee Workers fights social injustice and the conditions of poverty their members suffer from. Some of the major issues of concern are, 1, ending the economic exploitation of farm labor. The major issue is the need to provide a fair living wage. The current pay level is not a livable wage. Farm workers labor in the closest situation to slavery in America. 2, the need for the agribusiness industry to actually respect farm workers and to treat them and their family fairly and with dignity. Currently, many crew bosses are very, very abusive. 3, the need to have a safe and healthy working conditions. Many times, farm workers suffer from not having proper safety measures and equipment for working in the fields. An important example of this is being properly notified of pesticide spraying schedules. Many times farm workers are caught out in the fields and get contaminated from pesticide spray. Farm owners need to provide protective clothing, such as proper work boots and gloves, as another example. 4, the need for safe and clean homes. Many farm workers must live in overcrowded, dirty, and dilapidated conditions. These shanty shacks are not even fit for farm animals. 5, need for affordable health care. And 6, I would say respect within the Immokalee community. It is now my pleasure to welcome Mr. Gerardo Reyes Chavez to Wolf Mountain Native Radio. This is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, kinawantakwasin to all of our relations.
My name is Gerardo Reyes Chavez. I am a member of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers, and it's an honor for us to be with Radio for Peace International, with Ness. I'm a farm worker, and as thousands of farm workers, we are here in Southwest Florida, in Immokalee, working in the fields. The tomato industry is one of the largest industries in the state of Florida and all over the East Coast, with companies that are based in Florida. We are an organization that is working to change a situation of 20 years of stagnant wages for farm workers, no right to organize, no right to overtime pay for overtime work, suffering a lot of different abuses. In the past, there were beatings in the fields, violence in general, living in conditions that can be described as sweatshops in the fields, in some cases facing slavery in the fields where workers are being forced to work against their will at gunpoint. Some of the strategies that we have used are direct or strikes to get the attention of the companies. We have done 3 general strikes with over 3,000 workers stopping from going to work with the different companies here in Immokalee. We have done a hunger strike of 30 days by 6 of our members, a march of 230 miles from 4 miles to Orlando to the Association of Fruits and Vegetables of Florida, several attempts to get the attention of the governor. But since we are excluded from the National Labor Relations Act, all of those marches and actions did create an impact. They awake the consciousness of the people in Florida. But we realized that we had to involve other big players, and that's how we 4 years ago started the national boycott against Taco Bell, to make them responsible. Their place with our situation is that they are one of the largest buyers of tomatoes that we pick under conditions of sub-poverty. We did alliances with students, we did alliances with a lot of churches and groups of other workers all over the United States and in some other countries. We just recently win victory where our demands were complied in its totality.
Gerardo, I want to ask you to please talk about the history of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers founding. If I remember correctly, one of the main reasons why people came together was in response to a situation where a farm worker was severely beaten up by a crew boss for something as innocent as taking a break to get a drink of water. The crew boss's response was not only to deny the worker a water break in the hot day's sun, but to brutally hit him so that he and other workers would be afraid to ask for a well-earned work break. When that tomato picker after work later that evening showed up at the small CIW office, all bruised and bloodied, and news spread of what happened to him, it is my understanding that a group of fellow compañeros and compañeras went to confront that crew boss. Unfortunately, abuse and intimidation by contractors has been a common occurrence. I remember years ago covering the case of Mr. Abel Coelho, Jr. here in Immokalee. Coelho forced people to work by threatening violence and carrying out beatings. The squalor trailers he put farm workers in were in remote locations. Many of the workers were not told where they were or even allowed to make a phone call or send and receive mail. I remember talking to several of the farm workers at the courthouse who told me that the only transportation available was Coelho's bus. Even when the farm worker went to a grocery store after work, there was always a crew boss and several of his men to watch over field workers in order to ensure that they all returned onto the bus. Quello and other agricultural contractors were basically running forced labor camps. Abel Quello Jr. eventually was indicted and convicted in 1999 of smuggling workers. As I mentioned, I observed his court trial, and due to the fancy work of his defense attorney, he was only sentenced to 33 months in prison. By the way, I hear he is still here around in the Immokalee area, and I would not be surprised to hear that he's back involved in the farm labor business, perhaps by having someone else in his family be the holder of the farm contractor license. This also happens more often than people might think. Agribusiness is politically powerful, and the southern tradition of the good old boy system still operates here. Before you comment, Gerardo, I also want to mention to our worldwide listeners about the serious situation of poverty that most farm workers are forced to live in. Landlords and contractor crew bosses charge excessively high rent for run-down, dilapidated shacks and trailers. They are usually overcrowded with poor sanitation and toilet facilities. It is amazing how Collier County strictly enforces housing codes in the affluent part of the county like Naples, but somehow seems to neglect to enforce health and residential safety codes here in Immokalee. Of course, farm workers are exempt under many U.S. Department of Agriculture, U.S. Department of Labor, and Occupational Safety Health Administration, OSHA regulations. If that's not bad enough, the threat of action from INS can always be called in to quell any protests from farm workers. The use of contractor crew bosses is one of the ways in which multinational agribusiness companies like Yum Brands, Taco Bell in the past have been able to say that they are not responsible for any of the poor working and living conditions or worker pay. Gerardo, would you please briefly share with us the history of the formation of the Coalition of Immokalee Workers?
In this case, it was crew leader. In most of the cases, the crew leader become the stick that the agricultural industry, that the different companies use to hit the workers in the sense that they are the ones that yell at you, they are the ones that make sure that you work hard. If not, you are fired the next morning. They are the ones that implement the violence that comes from the top, talking just about the agricultural industry. It's sad to see that because the people that does that are usually second or third generation of people from Mexico or Guatemala or other places, mostly Mexicans. And that's how the agricultural industry uses its power, promising things to a certain population within the same culture, so it doesn't seem racist, but they are using everything that they have to give to certain people a little privilege and then using them as a stick to beat the workers. 5 or 6 cases every season were reported to the rural services, legal aid, and for every case, they were estimating that 8 to 10 cases were not being reported. It was a general idea that they had based on different investigations that they were doing. What was happening at that time was when someone was beat on the fields, the boss or the crew leader would come, pay whatever the government asked him to pay, like pay the fine, and then you get free the next day. They arrest you, right? You are the boss, you beat somebody, they arrest you, you pay the fee because you have money that you have been making from these workers. It was a deal. 5, 6 cases being reported, 10 per each case not being reported for fear. And the boss would get arrested, but then the next day they would pay the fine, they would be free. And they would say that to you: I can do whatever I want to you, because I know that if they come and arrest me, the next morning I'm going to be free and I'm going to look for you, and then we're going to talk. So people were afraid to denounce this kind of crime. It's basically a crime. One time, something happened in the fields. The coalition was beginning and all of the situation was happening. Then there was a case where a Guatemalan worker that was very short and skinny get beat in the field. Because something that was normal in the field, like some phrases that you hear a lot, is that you came here to work, not to drink water. You drink water when I tell you to drink water. So there was this imbalance of power between crew leaders and workers. So this worker refused to keep working. Because if you live in Southwest Florida, you know that the temperatures go up to 95 degrees, sometimes close to 100, and sometimes a little bit more. So working under these conditions, picking tomatoes, that is one of the especially hardest work in agriculture. You need to drink water. It's not a question of like being privileged to go to drink water when you want. It's your body needs that to keep going. This worker stopped working. He went to drink water. One of the persons that were in charge there came and beat him until he was lying on the ground, all bloody. Then he came to the coalition. He didn't know what to do. The coalition was starting. He was very afraid. It was in 96, if I'm not wrong, around that time. This worker came. What we did was we came out to the parking lot where most of the bosses of the companies come to pick up people, to transport them to the fields. And we were talking with the people after they come to work. And we were asking people, what do you think about this? This worker was beating because of the simple fact of wanting to drink water. Now, this is a situation that could happen to any of us tomorrow if we let this pass without doing anything. And at this time, it is not about going and make a complaint with the government, because we know what's going to happen. Probably this boss is going to beat him again if he saw him after he gets out of jail, paying the fine. So this time we have to do something different, and we must do it together. The law of the Constitution don't work in this instance. We must apply the law of the people. So the coalition organized a march that same day. And in the night, after all the people came, there were like 500 workers that went in a march to the house of this contractor and asked to talk to him. They opened the door just a little bit. There were a lot of police surrounding the area. He just opened the door and he was, please don't do anything. Don't beat me or anything. We did a declaration that day. If you were very brave to beat this worker, that is like half of your size, we are here to ask you to beat us all. Can you do that? 500 of us, we are asking that. Because you can't, we are here to do a declaration. Beating one of us is beating all of us. And next time that it happens, we are going to come again to ask you to do the same with all of us. Because we are not going to take this anymore. And after that, none of the workers, like for more than 2 weeks, this crew leader didn't get any person going to work with him. So it was a way basically establish the conditions of our job.
One night I dreamed I was in slavery. About 1860 was the time. Sorrow was the only sign. There was nothing around to ease my mind. Young woman singing, come on up, come on up, come on up.
One of the most important subjects that I often talk about on this Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices program is the pollution and contamination, not only to the environment, but to different peoples, different communities. And as many listeners know, I myself, growing up as a Native American farm worker, raking blueberries, picking strawberries, raspberries, cranberries, potatoes, apples, got heavily contaminated from pesticides, insecticides, fertilizers. So many American people, and perhaps people throughout the world who are even listening, live in urban areas, in city areas. Many don't even know where their food comes from or how food is produced and grown. That much of food now is very much dependent upon fertilizers and chemicals that also make people sick that they're not aware of. But my specific question to you is for you to please comment upon what are some of the health or problems people in Immokalee, in surrounding farm communities, are suffering as a result of being contaminated from pesticides. I know when I visited some of the fields, and when I used to be able to walk before I was in a wheelchair, within 5-10 minutes, my sneakers, my zapatos, I think you say, my shoes, were very much contaminated, wet and yellow. And I would have to go and, you know, take a shower because I know that poison would go through my feet. And that was just when I was visiting to look at some of the situations when I was doing investigative reports years ago on this subject. What about people who work, you know, day in and day out in years? Are there any so-called protections against pesticide spray? Do farmers, are they legally now required to inform farm workers when they're going to apply chemicals or use sprays? Here in Immokalee, do you know of cases of people who have become sick as a result of not just the physical hard labor, which is extremely hard, but also from health effects of chemical pesticide?
Well, that's another part of the whole package of problems that we face as farm workers here in Immokalee. Just to give a few examples of how we cannot use, even if there were these recommendations, or if we would have these recommendations, we cannot follow them for a few reasons. I'm going to give an example of oranges, for example. Oranges is the second most important production, in this area. When you go to pick oranges, you are exposed to the chemicals that get stick in the leaves and in the oranges. When you are picking, there's a dust that flies directly to your eyes. And this is nothing more than dust and chemical and the humidity of the morning all together. And when you finish your day, you are all like covering those, you are all black and your eyes all red. Many people lose their sight after years of doing this. If you ask a naranjero, that's how we call ourselves when we pick oranges, how long has he been working? If you know about this job, you don't need to ask that person, because you just look at this person in the eyes and you would have an idea. 10, 12, 15 years, 20 years, and they barely see. When you get old and you are not able to pick anymore, then you just become like a vegetable.
Throw away.
Throw away. No good anymore, like a tool that doesn't have a place within the labor force. And that's one of the things that happen, and that's inevitable for a few reasons. There's OSHA, right? They give trainings about personal protective equipment, if I'm not wrong, PPE, and they suggest to use different things to protect yourself. Well, those things do not work when you have to be in a constant hurry to make enough money to pay rent and to feed your family. Why? One of the recommendations is wearing goggles. Under temperatures that goes above the 100 degrees, when you are in the middle of a grove of oranges, the temperatures gets much more higher than that, because the air don't go through the trees. So the sun comes like directly and hits this spot really hard. So if you think about the idea of wearing goggles, after 2 seconds of wearing them on, you are not going to be able to see anything, because the heatness of your body is going to block your vision. The sweat is going to not allow you to see anything. So how can you be producing in your work? And more important than anything, how are you going to feed your family if you can't see? You could say, yeah, like, I mean, that's a necessity of the job, right? You go to pick oranges and you do your job, like take your time, just clean your goggles once in a while, pick the oranges and put them in the bins. But at the end of the day, you're not going to have anything. What they pay is $7.50 per bin, more than half a ton of oranges per bin, to earn $7.50. How could you possibly think about picking this amount of oranges, to pick enough oranges to get $50 in a day, wearing those kind of things? It's impossible. That's why, and it's the same with tomatoes. There are the gloves. They require to use gloves. But because of the wages, the gloves that are the kind of gloves that you use, like latex gloves, you are not productive. Aside of that, we are not fast enough with gloves. What it means is that if you want to earn enough to pay rents that goes up to $1,200 per rundown trailer here in Immokalee, and to feed your family back in Mexico, Guatemala, you have to take them off, because without gloves is faster. And those two examples go to the root of the problem that we are facing, the low wages. We have to kill ourselves every day in the fields, in the groves, whatever we are working in agriculture. We have to work as fast as we can in order to survive. That's when the necessity of wearing this protective equipment, do I want to be protected wearing those things? Do I want to use them to protect my health, knowing that at the end of the week I'm going to be hungry and my family with me? Or do I want to feed my family and taking these things that don't allow me to work faster because of the wages in order to have enough to feed my family? That's a issue that is a obvious answer. No one choose to use personal protective equipment in any kind of job in agriculture because of the wages. You have to produce in order to feed yourself and your family. If you wear those things, you are unproductive. So if we would have, on the other hand, a wage that is dignifying. We, of course, we don't want to become a statistic of cancer. And that those are some cases that we have seen in this community. We can't say in the moment, oh, we're being affected of pesticides, because those are usually chronic effects that results 10, 15 years after you were exposed to those chemicals. So the industry don't have to respond for that, but at the end we become statistic sometimes. If we would have living wages, for us that's the root of the problem. We would take our time, we would use this equipment to protect ourselves. But because of the wages, we have to do it without them.
Posada del fracaso, donde no hay consuelo ni ascensor. El desamparo y la humedad comparten colchón. Y cuando por la calle pasa la vida como un huracán, el hombre del traje gris saca un sucio calendario de bolsillo y grita, ¿quién me ha robado? ¿Cómo pudo sucederme a mí? Venga, ¿quién
me ha robado?
Lo guardaba en el cajón donde guardo el corazón. Mi madre en el último tren se largó con una peluquera 20 años menor. Y cuando exhiben esas risas de Instamatic en París, que no estaba en el sillón, se marchita viendo Falcon Crest, mi vieja, y piensa, ¿cómo pudo sucederme a mí? Venga, pero lo guardaba en el cajón donde guardo el corazón. ¿Alguien sabe que me ha robado? ¿Cómo pudo sucederme a mí? Pero lo guardaba en el cajón donde guardo el corazón. Negro como los los ángeles de Bachín. Febril como la carta de amor de un preso. Así estoy yo, así estoy yo sin ti. Perdido como un quinto en día de permiso, como un santo sin paraíso, como el ojo de Amití. Un año como un Gandhi con lamparones, como un barco sin horizonte. Así estoy yo sin ti. Mucho más triste que por él.
You are listening to Yat Kedichi Native Center's Honoring Mother Earth and Indigenous Voices. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices focuses on protecting Mother Earth and defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples. We are broadcasting on Radio for Peace International. Radio for Peace is the voice of peace, promoter of the environment, champion of human rights, denouncer of hate and injustice, advocate of the oppressed, defender of truth. Radio for Peace International is global community radio.
Music from the Coalition of Mockley Workers, CD recording of the Coalition's December 2004 General Assembly. The song was entitled Quien Meja Explota, sung by Joaquin Sabina. Earlier in the program, following Gerardo's commentary on CIW's organizing and resistance to farm labor camps and working conditions being modern-day slavery, we featured the song Harriet Tubman, reminding us of an earlier time of slavery in U.S. history. That song was performed by the All People Singers. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Wolf Mountain Native Radio. Please tune in next week for more of my conversation with Coalition of Mockley Workers spokesperson, my friend Gerardo Reyes-Chavez, in Program 3 of this special interview. To learn more about the Coalition of Mockley Workers and ways in which you can get involved in support of their struggle for justice, please visit CIW's website, www.ciw-online.org. Once again, the website for the Coalition of Mockley Workers is www.ciw-online.org. Or you can write to Coalition of Mockley Workers, that's CIW, P.O. Box 603, Immokalee, Florida, 34143, USA. Once again, you can write to Coalition of Mockley Workers, P.O. Box 603, that's Immokalee, capital I-M-M-O-K-A-L-E-E, Florida, zip code 34143, USA. We shall conclude today's program with a contemporary song from Anishinaabe singer-songwriter Annie Humphrey entitled Edge of America, reminding us about the many people still living in poverty in a nation that has so much wealth and economic disparity. Until the next Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, this is your host and producer, Ones Pritzker. Aho, Kinawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Somewhere near the edge of America, blood will flow like water to nourish prophet's crop. Somewhere near the edge of America, who's gonna feed on sugar and junk, a hunger not for eat anything? Edge of America, edge of America. Somewhere near the edge of America, whose sister is a battered woman, battered by a battered man. Today than yesterday, don't even want to think about tomorrow. Edge of America, edge of America. Our lives, we don't all have to fall.